Welcome to this episode of The Law Pod and our special series on Can the Record Be Trusted? I am Dr. Ulrike Lühr. I am currently a postdoc at the School for Public Policy and Global Affairs and the iSchool at the University of British Columbia. The digital age has produced a whole new generation of documentation, of course, from open source collections of vast amounts of data to eyewitness photos and videos captured on cell phones, with dozens of NGOs having been founded to collect evidence in Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Sudan, Ukraine, Gaza, and many more places. Today, I am speaking to Ahmed Aboufoul, who is an international lawyer and a legal advisor at Al-Haq. We will discuss the role of human rights documentation and records in the context of Palestine and the role digitization has in this kind of documentation. So Ahmed, welcome and thank you for joining us. Why don't you get us started with telling us about Al-Haq and what you guys do?
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. Al-Haq is an independent Palestinian human rights organization established in 1979. So it's the oldest in Palestine and in the region. And we have the mandate to protect and promote the human rights of the Palestinian people and the occupied Palestinian territory. This includes the individual and collective rights of the Palestinian people. And we do that by documenting human rights violations and violations of international humanitarian law, possible international crimes, and do advocacy before international bodies to advance the common goal for achieving justice and accountability. So we document human rights violations of the Palestinian Authority, of other actors in Palestine, of the Israeli occupation, and its violations within the occupied Palestinian territory.
Right. Thank you for that. You're mentioning that part of your work involves documentation. Can you elaborate a bit about the role that records play in your work, both in terms of your longer term mission and in the current context?
Yeah, absolutely. So a big part of our work is actually documentation. And this is the base for the rest of our work. So the work starts from the ground, and that is the advantage that Al-Haq has as a Palestinian human rights organization. So we're based in Ramallah in Palestine. We have staff across the occupied Palestinian territory in different governance in the West Bank and East Jerusalem and in the Gaza Strip, of course, before October 7th. Now the situation is much more difficult in Gaza. And documentation, as you know, is the starting point of any accountability work as we document these violations and any information we can gather that could help any judicial process in the future. It could be evidence that can prove individual criminal responsibility for certain individuals. The documentation we do can also contribute to work within the Human Rights Council and the United Nations in general. So this includes reports to special rapporteurs, submitting urgent appeals to special procedures, submitting Article 15 communications to the International Criminal Court about specific crimes and any other body we engage with. This also includes national jurisdictions in certain cases where there's a possibility of prosecuting those responsible for crimes, or strategic litigation cases that we have in different jurisdictions, including, for example, our case against the UK government for exporting arms to Israel. So the documentation we do can contribute to any aspect of our work, including the things that I mentioned. This also includes advocacy work, publication, production, reports. I can say everything we do one way or another relies on that documentation.
You are obviously working in a situation of protected violence and conflict that has been going on for a long time, which I'm sure sort of has implications for your work and creates certain challenges. Could you tell us a bit about those?
Absolutely. So as I said, Al-Haq was established in 1979, and we've been active in the occupied Palestinian territory ever since. The Israeli occupation started in 1967, so you're right, this is a protracted situation of armed conflict. This is the longest occupation in modern history. And the occupying power, the Israeli illegal occupation, tries to prevent any access to the occupied Palestinian territory to acquire documentation of human rights violations. This includes preventing UN Commission of Inquiries, UN Special Rapporteurs, and any investigative body from accessing the territory. This has rendered Palestinian civil society like Al-Haq one of the few sources of information of what actually happens on the ground, especially that the way we do documentation is in accordance with our methodology. So we provide documentation at the highest standards required for courts in particular. So this is not only documentation, this is information that can be qualified as evidence before courts of law. And the Israeli occupation that thrives in, on impunity does not want any form of accountability to be served. So to give you an idea how exceptionally difficult the situation is, some of my colleagues in the West Bank were actually arrested by the Israeli occupying powers. Some of my colleagues in Gaza, for example, they lost homes, they lost family members, they had to evacuate. Now they're living in tents and trying to do their work in an exceptionally difficult circumstances. As a matter of fact, since October 7th, after 3 weeks, we had to announce publicly that for the first time in our history, we're unable to cover the situation in the Gaza Strip properly as we used to do. So this is just an example of the of different, let's say, obstacles that we face. A few years ago, Israel also delegitimized and criminalized six Palestinian human rights organizations, including Al-Haq, and labeled them, quote unquote, as terrorist organizations. And of course, these are baseless allegations that were not recognized anywhere in the world, not by the EU, not by by any government in the world. But the purpose of that is to try to prevent the work of those organizations. And now with the International Criminal Court investigation and the application for arrest warrants, it seems that the attack on civil society will only intensify because it contributes in a significant manner to such investigations, whether at the ICC or elsewhere.
Okay. And can you tell us about the strategies you've developed to sort of keep working despite these challenges?
Yes. Well, we have different ways of doing our work. But what I can say that we follow our own methodology of ensuring that the documentation is within the standards required for the accountability mechanisms we deal with. And this can be a combination of different ways of doing that documentation. So let's say the traditional way of having field researchers on the ground in different locations that can actually visit those locations and gather information. This also includes testimonies. We also, let's say, in the past years, has also evolved to incorporate some technologies in our work. So, for example, we have a forensic architecture unit where we do reconstruction of crime scenes and we analyze the circumstances within which a certain act happened. So this can include analysis of the architecture of that place, of sound analysis of shade and light to determine exactly what happened. Sometimes sound analysis can determine the type of weaponry, the time that the shot was shot by an Israeli soldier. I can give an example, actually, our investigation into the killing of Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, a journalist of Al Jazeera, which is publicly available online on our website. And I hope your listeners can watch the video and see how this kind of work is being done. So this is what we call usually open source investigations, where we analyze material that is publicly available after verifying that the authenticity of this material. So if a video was taken in place, forensic architecture unit will be able to locate where the video was taken and if it was taken in that time. So everything is verified through this methodology and can be used in different fora. And of course, as I said, the traditional way of doing the work is being on the ground, where field researchers will gather the information. And to overcome these obstacles, we have a combination of both, depending on the situation, depending on the geographical location. So in Gaza now, after the genocide and after our announcement that we're unable to cover properly, it doesn't mean that we stopped our work. It means we just adopted new ways and new methodologies to be able to keep up our work in coordination and cooperation with other human rights organizations on the ground.
Thank you. If I understand correctly, then the way you work combines on-the-ground evidence collection with sort of scientific methods of evidence. Why is it so important to do both? And why also, I think, is it so important to put the evidence into context?
No, absolutely. It is important to combine both to ensure that we can document everything we can following the right methodology. So, for example, in the Gaza Strip, having the field work is much more difficult now. So open source can actually contribute to that work, whether relying on it solely, having, investigations solely relying on open source, or actually having open source documentation informing documentation from the ground and contributing to its work. So the combination of both methodologies is extremely helpful and necessary, especially in a situation like the situation in Palestine, to overcome these obstacles. And the other part of the question about the context, it's extremely important. I can't stress that enough, because crimes don't happen in a vacuum. They don't occur in a vacuum. And having this record of documentation for decades gives us the possibility of viewing what happened in the past years and being able to put these crimes in a context. And that's why our legal analysis, when it analyzes Israeli crimes, we were one of the first organizations in the world that concluded that Israeli occupation is illegal. Now, legally, a lot of people would say occupation is a factual matter. You can't say it's legal or illegal. Now, the International Court of Justice, in the advisory opinion, actually confirmed what the Palestinian organizations have been saying for decades. It said, actually, Israeli occupation is unlawful. Give you another example. And we're one of the organizations who said the Israeli occupation is actually a form of apartheid. It's an apartheid regime. It's an institutionalized regime of racial discrimination and segregation imposed by one group over the other with the intention to maintain that domination. And that conclusion, we didn't arrive at lightly. The reason we were able to make this determination as early as 2009 is because we had this record for the past decades that shows how Israel has been using and institutionalizing this regime throughout the years by having two-tiered law system for Israelis or even settlers in the occupied Palestinian territories and Palestinians under its occupation. The whole list of laws discriminatory against the Palestinian people, the different roads where it's exclusively for settlers use, where Palestinians cannot use. So having this catalog, this record for decades, allows us to zoom out and situate the specific incidents in the larger context, that is, context of Israeli illegal occupation, which is part of its settler colonial regime that is imposed as an apartheid regime on the Palestinian people as a whole.
And in that work, you already, I think, pointed to the forensic architecture example and the sort of interactive map and site you've built online. I want to pick up on that. Could you tell us a bit more about the role that digital tools play in your documentation, but also in how you make this documentation, how you use it, how you make it accessible, how it allows people to engage with what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. This depends on the kind of documentation we're talking about. It depends on certain incidents. So you're right, we use technologies in our documentation, mostly within, let's say, the open source investigation realm and forensic architecture work. And you referred to an interactive map. Also, your listeners can check it online also on the website, where we have a forensic architecture investigation showing the systematic targeting of hospitals in the Gaza Strip since the genocide started on October 7th, and how Israel employed the same tactics in each hospital. So it wasn't coincidence, so it was deliberate. And this usage of technologies, reconstructing what happened in these hospitals and being able to compare these different situations, help us to reach the conclusion that this was not accidental. This was a deliberate plan that employed against the medical infrastructure, including hospitals in Palestine is actually an integral component of the genocidal mentality. Because if you want to push people out of the territory, the safe haven for any civilian population is a hospital to be able to receive medical care. And if you destroy this infrastructure, you push people out. So the targeting of these hospitals was a deliberate plan and was, let's say, part of a long-term plan to ensure that even those who will survive the bombardments and the direct attacks might not find the medical care that they need and actually lose their lives because of that. And this is not, let's say, a theoretical conclusion. As a matter of fact, Israeli officials have even said that publicly. One of them, for example, said, it's good if there is disease widespread in Gaza. It makes our job easier that they would die themselves. We don't have to use more bombs. And these are genocidal statements that are publicly available online. So they're not just statements here. You know, we're connecting these statements to acts on the ground. And thanks to this usage of technology, forensic architecture, method of documenting, we're able to connect the two. We're able to visually see how these statements have been translated on the ground to acts. And like these were not only rhetoric, this was a policy that the army was also implementing on the ground.
Right. That sort of points at a lot of opportunities that digital tools offer for making your work, I guess, accessible or more engaging in a way. Do you also see challenges in the digitization of human rights documentation?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the challenges across the board, not only for the situation in Palestine. So, you know, for example, in Palestine, and because we live under occupation, everything is controlled by that occupation. So, for example, using documentation and let's say store it or archive it online, sometimes it's not the safest option because can be vulnerable to hacking. And as a matter of fact, Israel, it's documented that Israel tried to hack the phones of our field researchers, tried to get information. They actually raided our offices, tried to shut it down. And at that time when my colleagues arrived to office, people had opened it themselves. So we continued our work. In a way, we continued our work by the order of the Palestinian people who actually opened that door. But I'm trying to say that this experience also tells you that while using technologies is important, at least, for example, from our experience, it's good for open source investigations, for things that are already publicly available. But for certain types of investigations, certain type of information, when it relates to witness testimonies, also relates to information about victims or witnesses, this can be dangerous. This can be expose vulnerable people to repression from the same perpetrator. And therefore, you know, there are different ways of preserving that information. And I think in like using technology is one of the main challenges also is a verification of material that you have online. And again, Al-Haq has its own guidelines, its own methodology to ensure that everything is verified, geolocated in the appropriate manner, and everything we share with any accountability mechanism is something we can prove. And I'm proud to say that until this very moment, none of our work has ever been challenged or proved that there is any flaw in it. As a matter of fact, that also just explains the way Israel attacks civil society in Palestine, mm-hmm. including Al-Haq. They never engage with our findings because we do it the right way, and they can't challenge the work we do. And that's why they try to silence us.
Thank you. And I think that unfortunately we are already out of time, but that brings us to a good end and shows the power of these tools and the documentation work and all the work that you do. So thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me and for this opportunity. Appreciate it.
Thank you.